Try as I might, I cannot get out of the light. Let's hope that the metaphor works for this class. And I actually have a lot I want to say. First of all, thank you for showing up. I decided to give this class today, really before the experience I'm going through is completed. And I thought it was important. I've often thought of myself as reporting from the field, like a good soldier trying to send notes back home that captures the truth of battle or human experience. I'm going to go back a little ways. 10 years ago, on the 3rd of October, I had what I referred to as an awakening or an enlightenment or a realization that there was no Bruce. It was sort of stunning and potent. I was in North Carolina with a group of awakened people, and they kind of celebrated my awakening. And I remember coming back to California and saying to Blanche, I will love you more than Bruce ever did. That didn't prove to be completely true. What I understood over time was that what had occurred to me, for me, inside me, was a graduation from kindergarten to first grade. And the last 10 years have been extraordinarily expansive, dynamic, spiritually vibrant. Anne Cameron, who is a student and deep friend of mine and an astrologer, said to me about a year and a half ago that I was about to go through a period called Neptune conjunct Sun. And I'm sure I've shared that with you. What it represents in spiritual terms is the death of the ego, the arrival at the core self. And for me, it was a long, year-long process. In some ways culminating this November, and then again really finalizing in January, interestingly enough, right between the inauguration and Rudy's birthday. This has been an amazing year. As you all know, I moved to upstate New York from California. I did not want to move. I was moved. I was transported. I followed my grandchildren. I followed my heart. And I followed Blanche. And we settled in a home that I did not love, but was fine, workable. And I had this feeling we could add on to it and make it right. We actually attempted to do that. And then the contractor gave me prices that were double what I had imagined or felt I could afford. And he came up with this idea, just build on the other side of the house. It'll give you more basement space. It'll give you your sunroom, which would ultimately be a bedroom on the first floor with a bathroom for when I could no longer climb stairs, or Blanche couldn't. And then we also realized it would give us a deck off of our bedroom. And we built that extension. And it proved to be more beautiful than anything I could imagine. The sunroom is magical. The basement is a studio gallery that opens onto a patio that I never imagined would be there. The deck is a treehouse in the most beautiful setting imaginable. And of course, it cost me the same amount of money as if I bought on the built on the other side of the house. So I didn't get away scot-free, but I created a cocoon that was quite powerful. I decided to have this operation on my throat, thinking because of COVID, the time to do it was summer, while the pandemic was somewhat in recluse. And I did not expect the operation to have complications, but it did. And the complications were nerve problems. And I experienced, as most of you know from the letter I sent out, the most excruciating, harrowing pain I have ever known. I always known that life could cause pain. I've experienced a little bit of the psychological version, emotional version, but the physical pain had never emerged. This was pain that was undeniable and honestly inescapable. I could go nowhere, do nothing. And at that moment, I could not find Rudy. I could not find my practice. I could not find my belief system. George Subkoff told me his son once slammed his thumb in a car door and 30 years of Buddhist practice went out the window. I always found that very funny, but I fully understand it. I was abandoned in every way by my practice, by my belief, by what could save me from the pain. I ended up in emergency rooms where they gave me everything they had, including morphine, which I assumed would finalize it. Did nothing. I called the emergency room and said, can I come back? You've got to do more. And they said, no, there's nothing left we can do. And to feel that abandoned was so potent. Nothing left they could do. Blanche and I began to seek out alternatives and ended up getting steroid shots and muscle relaxants and ended up finding a day of relief and then it would come surging back. And we went to the emergency room in Albany where they had ended up putting me back in the hospital. And they started taking MRIs and doing all that. And I ended up with pain doctors helping me out with something called Lyrica. Another pill equivalent to that is Neurontin, which are nerve pills. I didn't fully know what they were for. In my mind, they are not highly evolved medications, but they help. And this doctor, this nerve doctor, I saw that I should be taking more than was prescribed in the hospital, and I added more. And one of the side effects was blurry vision. And suddenly my vision was blurry. And I couldn't read. And having lost my voice in all of this, and having had pain in my arm, and having trouble typing, I couldn't see, I couldn't speak, and I couldn't communicate, even in writing. And I went, wow, what is all this? But as all of you know, who've read my emails and heard or read my written talk, I came to the other side of the pain. The pills really helped a bit. And what I discovered and what I've shared with you was I have never known so much love ever, ever. I did not know it was possible to love so completely, so impersonally. And of course, the focus was my wife. And I didn't know, I loved Blanche. I didn't know I could love her that much. We've always had our issues and all of our stuff. And we've been married 50 years, 51. And, you know, you get used to certain things, but this love washed all that away. And what it did was it took in the totality of the person. It was the whole of love, not the part of you feel in the moment. It was endless, infinite. And I realized it was washing Bruce away in a way that I had never understood. And I remembered something Adi Ashanti, one of the great non-dualistic teachers, said. He said, awakening, enlightenment, realization take 10 years to settle in. And I am arriving at 10 years. That was a beep sound to acknowledge that 10 years is a long time. And I have arrived there. And this thing is taking place. It's indescribable in terms of its vastness, its wholeness, and the way it washes away reactivity. Reactivity is the part of the person and the personality that closes down, that defines itself with annoyance or anger, or this is who I am, or hostility, or pleasure. It's a defining barrier between us and all there is. And I've watched that fall away before, but never like this. I'm not trying to talk as though I know everything. The feeling that I have is that I am in touch with the mystery, and it is unknowable, unsolvable, absolute. I do not feel a personality or a persona that needs to grasp it. In a certain sense, I am it. But more truly, we are it. There is no one who is not it. No one. All that stands between that be still and know that I am is the lack of stillness and the defining element of reactiveness. The great Zen teachers that I've read about and heard about arrive at a place of aso, aso. My mother-in-law, if I've said a million times, on her deathbed, her final non-words to me were, and that's kind of what you arrive at, this enormous sense of there's only one thing, and you are that thing. And it filled me with love, so powerful, that anyone who came in my presence started to be gifted it. I had nothing to do with it. It was just because we knew each other, because we were in the same relative space, it flooded out. And then the other day, I woke up and there was no love at all. It was gone. And I went, I knew that might happen. And I thought I had lost it. And then this powerful realization washed through me, and it said, love is not the ultimate truth. Nothing is. There is nothing. It is all nothingness. You are nothing. And out of that nothingness, everything arises. And probably, I don't know this for a fact, it feels like love is the first thing to manifest. And then there is beauty and truth in whatever order. And they spread out in infinite ways. And witnesses come out of love through manifested birth, through love itself in the best of times. They are born into the manifest itself as witnesses. The witness defines itself through reaction. I love this person, I don't like that person. I love ice cream, I don't like candy. Whatever the things are that start to mold us as people. And then we start to get possessive. We start to get egoistic. We start to get, this is mine, not yours. This is for me, not for you. All of that starts to happen. And the world becomes this narrative, this drama, of which we are participants and witnesses. When life decides to wash away the person, for whatever reason, it allows that person to witness without reaction, without knowledge, without anything. The witnessing is driven by basically directives from your heart. It's also directives from your mind and your belly. But it tells you, move through life in this way and serve. Be available. Witness what I am. Touch, feel, know what I am. And that's what happens. I'm still in the cocoon. I imagine, come November-ish, maybe January, the butterfly will arise, fly out. I don't know. I don't care. It may be nothing more than what I feel right now. But what I feel right now is not singular to me. I am here to announce it to you, that what I am, you are, we are. And if we follow just the simplest of all teachings, Rudy's teachings, sit down, take a breath, open your heart, and ask inside for help to surrender. Well, what are you surrendering? You're surrendering the part of you that reacts to stuff, that defines you as separate from all that is. You are not separate. You have never been separate. You are the great witness. You may not know what you are. What we are part of is so beyond our limited capacity to contextualize in any way. But we are this thing. We are this I am. And we are here to witness it. There's a vast number of people on this planet, and not all of them are ready to know this, are able to know this, or capable. But you are, or you wouldn't be here. You are here hearing this because you are born to witness the truth, the beauty, and the love of this world. And it has to start with a practice of loving the person closest to you. Interestingly, today so many people are here in pairs. And I find that really compelling. We need to start with who is closest to you in the mandala, your partner. And you need to love them. And you need to not react to them. And they will give you 100 million reasons to react. And every one of those is an opportunity not to do that. And if you can just step back, you'll be free. And what happens when realization takes place is reaction falls away. There's no one not reacting. It just doesn't take place. And if it does take place, it's really interesting. I got very angry yesterday at somebody who, long story, I went to pick up Indian food, could see it sitting on a table for 20 minutes, and they had no idea it was there. It was so incompetent. And I got really angry at the proprietor. And I walked out of the store wondering, should I say I'm sorry for my outburst of anger? And all I could think of was Christ and the money changers and his yelling at the guys in the temple for behaving improperly. And I said, no, this was fine. It was righteous in its own way. And there was no lingering anything. he perhaps learned a lesson, maybe not. But I understood the world is reactive. The world does stuff. The teaching beyond non-reaction that's come to me, and I've talked this already, and I'm not alone in talking this. The deep, deep teaching beyond take a breath and surrender is be kind and be good. That's the doing part of life, the being part of life. Every opportunity, be kind, even when your instinct is not to be. Do good, even when you are lazy and don't want to. Let that flow forward. George reminded me during one of my talks that that's the Dalai Lama's major teaching. And I was telling this to my cousin Joni the other night, and she said, her rabbi just gave a whole talk on that. Kindness and goodness. That is the simplest version of all of this. So what I want to say to all of you, as I'm flooding the screen with this too much sunlight, is the light is rising. It's shining. It is real. It's not mine. It is ours. We have the opportunity to do the work. I don't know why this astrological configuration has occurred. Other astrologers have stepped in, Vedic astrologers and more recent astrologers, to imply that even in the Vedic system, what's going on for me is complicated and difficult. One astrologer said when she saw my sign, she started to cry. And I get it. I get it. Pain is horrible. It's horrible. And witnessing people go through pain is horrible. But what comes out the other side, if you get to the other side, is empathy for everyone, everyone who's ever known pain on any level. It will bring you to love. It'll bring you to tears. You will feel what that is. It is profound. I've ended many of my talks with Christ in the last recent times. And I talked about Christ on the cross, and I understood Christ on the cross because he suffered pain in ways that none of us can understand, but I began to sense in my days of unbearable pain. And what he did heroically in that pain was to turn his attention from himself and his suffering outward to the others, to other, whatever other is. In this case, it was those tormenting him. And he said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That forgiveness was the freeing element, the love of other that suddenly pours through as part of pain, if you allow it to. Pain is a doorway to that. Rudy said, pain is God's love. I never understood that. But now I do. The experience for Christ after forgiving was the sky opened up, the light poured through, and he said, unto your hands I commend my spirit. And he left this world. Christ came into this world to teach us how to die, how to deal with what for many people will be the ultimate experience, which is pain. I am here just to say, in simpler terms, from the pain I felt, which was not the pain of death, it was human suffering. But it's a doorway to love, and it ultimately serves one purpose. It tears your flesh away and opens you up. As I said in my email, and also in a movie that I wrote called Jacob's Ladder, I brought in a line from Meister Eckhart, the theologian, I think from the 1600s, maybe later. And his line was, if you're afraid of dying, you will see demons pulling you from your flesh. If you're open to dying, the same demons will be angels freeing you from the earth. It's all in how you look at it. The day after this period of enormous suffering happened, someone I never met wrote me out of the blue and quoted that line back to me. I had put it into a movie. Meister Eckhart had given it to me. I shared it. I gave it to a character named Louis, who was based on the chiropractor who saved my back many years ago from terrible, great pain back in the 70s. All of this alignment, sharing, putting it out and coming back to you. That's how this works. We're in this together. I love you guys. I love you separately, individually, one-on-one. I love you. And it isn't Bruce's talking. It's certainly got what used to be, I mean, it's not even got Bruce's voice. It's got whatever this is. It's so potent. It's so powerful. It'll wash all of you away. Let yourself go. There's nothing there to hold on to. Anything that you think is worthwhile does not compare to the enormity of the oceanic love or the oceanic nothingness from which you arise, that you are, and that turns you into a witness to itself. That's what we are. Be that. Open to that. I know that you've all been sitting for years and years. This is the time. Trust me, it will take you when it's ready. Up until that point, as far as I understand, it's just practice. Practice is worth it. Practice being good. Practice being kind. Practice loving each other. Practice letting go of all the stupid reactions that you have to stupid stuff. Also, you will have to let go of the reaction to the beauty. You will have to let go to the reaction of loving life. That will come too. It's a lot of letting go. A lot of letting go. But I will tell you, at this moment, I take these walks down the street and I talk out loud like a mad person. And I just say thank you. I say thank you. Honestly, for everything. For you guys. For my family. For my children. For something moving me here, for the house that I find myself in, and for the life, the wife who has loved me, supported me, been there for me for all these years. I say thank you, and I express unending love. I know I can go on, and I know it's getting like, yeah, you said that already. If you tune in next week, forgive me, it'll probably be the same thing. And you can all stop. You can all stop tuning in. And I can stop teaching. I have no obligation in myself to teach. I'm just doing what I'm told. That's all I'm doing. When it tells me to rewash the fork because I didn't get it clean, I rewash the fork. It's not the big stuff. It's the day-to-day little stuff. It tells me what to do, or simply, I just do the thing that's there. We all can do that. I will stop talking. I will try to do this back week by week. Next week, this brace will still be on, but the week after, my doctor allows me to take it off. I will be free. The only problem is I jerk my neck a lot when I teach, so I may put it on, but a lot of freedom waiting for me. And I have other stuff to talk about, because we're all going to need to talk about what's going on in our lives around us. But I can mostly tell you, forgive me for repeating myself, when Justice Ginsburg died, I don't know why, I just knew that was God speaking. She died on Rosh Hashanah, the holiest of the holy days for Jewish people. And I said to Blanche, we're in God's hands. And I knew it to be true. I know it to be true to this moment. To whatever degree you can surrender yourself to that truth, it'll make life a lot easier day by day. So I'm going to shut up. I love you. Thank you for coming. And I will be in Los Angeles next week on Zoom, and then in New York for the 2 weeks after that. I'll see people then. Love you, love you, love you. Light is like, wow. Okay. I have to remember how to do this.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.
You're all totally welcome.